Man, oh man, it's good to be back. It's good to be back behind the mic. I feel like I'm home again. I feel like LeBron James coming on home again. It's just been a while, y'all. It's just been a while. But thank you for tuning in, my faithful listeners. I, Jay Hicks, I'm back here, Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast, coming at you once again. It is late, ladies and gentlemen. It is very late right now. It is actually late on a Saturday evening, technically Sunday morning where I am. I believe it still might be Saturday, maybe, where our guest is located. But it is that late, but we wanted to make sure that we got this in. I know you guys, and I'm so sorry. I know it's been like 6 weeks since we've had a podcast, and so that's on me. My apologies to you. There's been a lot of stuff going on lately in my life personally. Most notably, I moved. So everybody's moved before. It's kind of a pain in the butt. It's kind of a big process. And you just kind of deal with it. But in so doing, I kind of got caught up a little bit with the whole moving thing and the decorating thing and the buying furniture thing and doing all that type of stuff. That's kind of had a lot to do with why we haven't been on in a little bit. If you may actually notice that the sound might be slightly different here where I am because I moved. So we have a new studio, and I'm using air quotes for studio. We have a new studio here, and so you know, the recording may come off a little bit different on the audio tip. So if it sounds a lot different, I apologize for that. Maybe it'll work out and sound actually better. I don't really know yet. We'll see when we get there. But so there's that going on. Obviously, we've still been keeping up with the site. We did our NBA previews, and we did the audio preview for the NFL. This time, I decided to go back to the written preview for the NBA. And with that, it's a lot of writing, as you guys have seen. I mean, we did previews for each division, and we did conference predictions and the NBA championship prediction. If you haven't read it in detail, go ahead and check it out, hiphopsportsreport.com. I'll give you a sneak peek into who I have in the finals right now. I have the Cavs and the Mavs in the finals, the Dallas Mavericks and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Why do I have those teams in the NBA finals? Go ahead and read the article, check that out. And of course, you can always hit us up on Twitter, twitter.com/HHS Report. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/HHS Report. Of course, we're on iTunes. That's where you're probably hearing this podcast right now. Hit us on iTunes if you have any comments, feedback, want to like the podcast, anything of that nature. Please get at us on iTunes, Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. We appreciate that. Now, our guest this evening has joined us on a couple of occasions before. He is a sports aficionado and a hip hop aficionado, so it kind of works out pretty conveniently that he's going to be joining us. This guy is a friend of the podcast, a friend of mine, a sibling of mine, in fact, and an author and a father. He goes by the name of Kenneth Hicks Jr. Kenneth, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. I'm just happy to be back on here, man. I know it's been a long time. We shouldn't have left you without a podcast to step to.
You know, I think I actually did that once before on the podcast. I think I started a podcast like that not that long ago, to be honest with you.
Oh, the irony. I thought I was coming up big here. That was just on the fly there. I just threw that in there. Yeah, but all that being said, though, it's great. Everything's going great right now, as much as it can be. So, I'm just happy to be back on the show, man, honestly.
Yeah, you're not original at all with that, but that's okay. You are kind of original as it comes to your writing. And so before we get into anything else, let's just go ahead and talk about the book real quick. We'll just plug it real quick. I know we're not at the finish line just yet, but we're getting there. The book, A Natural Life, correct?
Natural Life is the title, yes. Natural Life. It's a book I've been working on for quite some time. For those of you who do happen to know me, you know I've been writing since way back when. I've been writing for most of my life. You know, some people were born to rock the mic. Some people were born to shoot a basketball or catch a football. You know, I was born for this. So, that being said, it's a certain level of quality that you get with my work. I'm really excited. This is the best project I've ever been a part of. I'm proud of it. I'm proud of it. I'm excited. And I just can't wait for the people to really get the book and be able to check it out and see what it's about.
Word up, man. And I mean, this is like your fourth book now, I believe, right?
Yes, it is my fourth book. I've had one that I put out in 2004. I put out two simultaneously in 2009, one with my partner Jabril Turner, and then one by myself, and this will be my fourth one.
Shout out to Big Brill. And yeah, man, I got an advanced copy of this book, y'all, and let me tell you something. I haven't completed it yet. I'm about halfway through it, but it's dope. It's definitely dope, especially if you hail from where we hail from, Northeast Ohio. But really, anybody, man, anybody that's just you know, that grew up, came up in the streets, man, or came up in a certain era, you could definitely appreciate what we have going on in this book and what Kenny's bringing to the table here. So definitely gonna keep tabs on that, and I will continue to keep you guys abreast of the progress with that book. Natural Life. I keep wanting to call it Unnatural Life. I'm sorry about that. Natural Life. It's coming at y'all soon in early 2015, most likely. Now, Kenny, I wanted to really, you know, there's obviously a lot of stuff going on in the world of sports. Matter of fact, since the last time I spoke to y'all, a lot has gone down. We've been gone for 6 weeks from the podcast. So that's 6 weeks of the NFL season. We've seen the start of the NBA season. We've seen college football in full swing. We got the playoff seeding going. I just watched Florida State barely escape against Miami. You know, we've seen all of this stuff. The San Francisco Giants won the World Series. E-40 was there. Just E-40 was right behind the dugout for Game 7 in Kansas City. I synced him with my own two eyes. And then I saw it on Twitter when he tweeted out a picture from behind home plate. It was awesome. But shout out to the San Francisco Giants and to the Kansas City Royals, which it was funny because we did a podcast, not our most recent podcast, but the one right before that. It was towards the end of October or September, I believe. Rather, and we talked a lot about playoff baseball with our guest Andy Roberts, and the one thing, you know, and this is on me just as being a host and trying to keep the time right and everything, the one thing that we did not get to touch on that I meant to touch on in that podcast was dark horses. You know, who do you think is a dark horse that might sneak in there and get hot at the right time and make a run at it? We didn't really get a chance to touch on that, but that's the exact lane that the Kansas City Royals are in, and I had anticipated that we were going to talk about them, but you know, it didn't work out happening at that time. And it's just ironic that Kansas City was the team that all of a sudden caught fire. They won the one-game playoff. They go and they beat the Anaheim Angels, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, of Los Angeles Angels. And then they go ahead and beat the Orioles. You know, these teams were like the two best teams in the American League all year. And they made it all the way to Game 7 of the World Series at home. Very admirable performance by the Royals. And so, for a small market team, I just wanted to commend them on the season. I know they're probably not in it for moral victories or anything like that, but I just felt like something had to be said on behalf for the Royals, I should say. And then for the Giants, of course, I mean, I did tell you guys on the podcast, we did touch on the Giants and the Cardinals, and I said, you know what, everybody's talking about the Dodgers and the Nationals and all these teams, and I'm just stuck on the Giants and Cardinals. It's going to be one of those two teams in the end. And sure enough, they met up in the NLCS, and we had the Giants making it all the way and winning their third World Series in 5 years, and Madison Bumgarner put on one of the most breathtaking displays of pitching I've ever seen in the World Series or in any point in baseball. And it was really some historic stuff that we were watching, man. So shout out to Madison Bumgarner, because we appreciate greatness here on the Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast. Now, having said all that, I wanted to dedicate this show primarily to hip hop, because we haven't really gotten a lot to talk about hip hop, just the state of hip hop, where we are with that right now. So Kenny's going to join us this evening, and we're going to talk primarily about hip hop. That is, Kenny, unless there's anything you want to get off your chest real quick as far as the sports world was concerned, the floor is yours.
You know, again, you got to pay your respect where it's due. So, again, shout out to the world champions, you know, and also shout out to E40, you know. That's what this is really about. You know, this is a hip-hop sports report. So where are you going to get hip-hop and sports meeting together? Home plate.
Worlds colliding, E40 at home plate. And matter of fact, I think today's E40's birthday, so happy birthday to E40. And I only know that because on Twitter I follow E40, and the San Francisco Giants official Giants homepage shouted him out tonight. So there you go. Happy birthday. Yeah, happy birthday, E40. E Fonzarelli.
E40 on the break? Is that possible? Can we maybe get a little love for E40 on the break? Is that possible today?
I suppose we could. You know, I hadn't planned on it. But I suppose we could work that in. I mean, I'm not opposed to doing that at all. E40 it is. It's an E40 kind of podcast. I think, you know, the Giants earned that much, I think. Absolutely. And one other thing that we forgot to touch on was Peyton Manning played Tom Brady since the last time we did a podcast. And guess what?
And there was much defecation.
And hey, man, I don't know how many times I got to talk about Brady and Manning, man. I love the Brady Manning rivalry and all that. All right, y'all, we BS'd enough. Let's get to hip hop. Okay, this is happening now. Now, one other thing that I did just see before we started taping was Kendrick Lamar. He is been making the circuits. He's been making his rounds, doing the press junket thing. We saw him on the Breakfast Club recently. We saw him on Hot 97, Rosenberg and Ebro, which is a far less entertaining radio show in my personal opinion, but you know, I got no disrespect to them, just my personal preference. I happen to prefer the Breakfast Club over them, as long as we're going to talk about that little rivalry between them. And then Kendrick was on Saturday Night Live just now, and he performed, and he performed Pay For It with J-Rock, and he also performed I Love Myself, and he had on some Freaky Contacts, and he was doing this kind of fun jig during the breakdown of the song, and it looks like he added some new bars at the end of the song. And you couldn't really understand what he was saying because he was rapping so fast. He was a little bit muffled on the mic, and there was, you know, a lot of instrumentation in the background and all that. But it was a dope performance. The crowd really seemed to gravitate to Kendrick. And it's funny to me because I tweeted out right afterwards that Kendrick has to be considered, in addition to being one of the great lyricists of this generation, he's also one of the great live performers, because every time he performs, he draws you in. And whether he's just spitting alone on the stage by himself, just doing his thing like I saw him on Summer Jam, not this past year but the year before, or if he's wailing on the drum with Imagine Dragons at the Grammys, or if he's doing what he did tonight on Saturday Night Live, no matter the venue, he's always attracting the viewer, and he always has you keyed in on whatever it is he's doing. I feel like he's a great performer. I haven't had the chance to see him live yet, but he's something else though. But he's got an album coming. I don't think they've made a release date yet. I don't know if he's gonna do a Beyonce thing and just drop it out of the sky. That could happen any second now. We don't know, but we know an album is coming from Kendrick. There's a lot of anticipation, though, because people, even though it's technically not his sophomore album, people are calling it his sophomore album. It's really just his second album on a major. The pressure still seems to be there with him, though. What are you expecting from Kendrick, Kenny? I mean, do you feel like he has an inordinate amount of pressure on him right now, or that he should feel that kind of pressure?
Honestly, no. I mean, to be 100% honest with you, I think that the pressure was on him the first time around. You know, that was the time where, you know, the question was, can he live up to the hype? You know, you have to remember, this was after The Game and Snoop Dogg had crowned him the next king of L.A., and Dr. Dre had already co-signed him, and he was already signed to Aftermath, and he had done these features with Drake, and, you know, the buzz had already started building. So the question became, could he live up to the hype of good, you know, with Good Kid, Mad City? And I think he did that and more. So moving forward, I think that this time along, I don't think that he really is facing the same type of stress. And I think that you can kind of tell it in just his demeanor. I think that he's having fun with the music. He's enjoying himself. He's excited and he's hungry. And he's still so talented, and I think that he has a lot more to show us. I think that this time around, he's just looking to maybe just find some other avenues and lanes that are maybe a little less traveled, give us something that maybe is not what we're accustomed to right now on the radio. And I think that's kind of what he's looking for. He's looking to bring subject matter and lyricism to the table on subjects that maybe you don't hear about every day. So I think that I'm excited for the album, personally. I think that, you know, from what I've heard, you know, just on the internet and things of that nature, about what can be expected from this album. You know, I've heard a lot of positive things, a lot of great feedback. I've heard that, he was working with some really, top-notch, producers, obviously, and things of that nature. And I just think that overall, this is going to be a really exciting project. This might be the most anticipated project of 2015. It may be early to say that, but you know, I think that whenever a Kendrick Lamar album comes out, people are waiting for it. And I think that if one thing that we've known in his short career is that he's proven to be consistent up to this point. So I would imagine that we can expect more consistency and quality music coming from him in the future here.
Are you worried, though, Are you worried at all? Because, like, a small part of me is a little bit concerned. Only because, I mean, I respect what he's doing. I know, he's trying to step out and do some different stuff, like you said. He always wants to... He carries a burden around with him of this responsibility that of talking about stuff that actually matters on his records and reaching people that need to be reached. And in interviews, he's talking about how he's had people who have contemplated suicide coming up to him at his shows and saying, you're literally giving me life and giving me reason to continue and all this type of stuff. It's very deep stuff, but he's also trying to stir the pot creatively on the music end of it. And he came up with the single "I," which you all have probably heard by now. It's been all over the place. It's in commercials and everywhere else with the Isley Brothers sample. I love the message of the song. I don't love the song. Just musically, I'm just not a fan. I just don't enjoy it. I mean, it's got a little catch to it, I guess, but it's not for me. I don't really care for it. But when I hear that type of record and hear that, it really sounds like he's trying to cross over a little bit even more. I don't even know if crossing over is necessary. So I guess, Kenny, you can answer this in a moment. Is crossing over in 2014, quote-unquote crossing over, is that even necessary anymore? Because hip-hop has become so mainstream and so pop just on its own. I kind of feel like Kendrick, the for lack of a better term, the old Kendrick, just with straight bars, that could probably cross over as well as anything else. But in addition to that, he's doing that. He's kind of doing some new stuff with his hair. He's kind of twisting his hair up, getting a little funky and all this stuff. He's kind of rocking some different kind of gear now. Like, I'm just kind of looking at him and I'm just like, okay, we've seen this movie before. He's like, if you told me he was like messing with a chick or something like that, like Erykah Badu or something. We know she's like kryptonite for MCs, but like not necessarily her. But if he was like had like a new chick in his life that was kind of like, a little hippie-ish or something like that, I wouldn't be totally shocked, and I would be getting kind of worried. Is any part of you, like on a 1 to 10 scale, where do you fall as far as how worried you are about the direction of this new project? Or has Kendrick completely earned our benefit of the doubt? And then also, if you could address whether or not you think crossing over matters anymore.
Well, I'll say this. I think, first of all, on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried am I about his album? I would say it's relatively low. I would say about a 3 to a 4. To be honest with you, honestly, I wasn't a fan of the lead single either. Much like you, I get the message and I respect the message and I like what he's doing and I even like the beat, but at the same time, it's just the song, it just seemed a little too ambitious for me. There's one thing to make just good music and even make good music with a message, but it's another thing to just kind of, beat people over the head with a message.
You don't like that. I know you don't like when cats come off too preachy and stuff like that.
Right. So, it doesn't get more blatant than "I love myself." That's very, it's a very strong statement. And it's not to say that it's not a strong statement that needs to be heard even. I'm of the belief that, people need to learn how to love themselves, and a lot of the negativity that we face in the world would actually change if people had a certain level of self-respect and self-love. So he's very wise for making songs that to your point, matter, and for making songs that actually have relevance to what is actually going on in this world these days. Just as far as for me personally, I've always been a very strong believer that positivity does not make anything good. You can make good art, and you can make positive art, and you can make good positive art, but they don't necessarily go hand in hand. There's a lot of people that make positive stuff, and it's just not good artistically. And up to this point, he's been very good at towing the line of being able to make stuff that is of substance and relevance, and making stuff that is still artistically creative. And, giving you bars, giving you rhymes, giving you wordplay, giving you lyricism, giving you showmanship. He has that capacity to give you all of that at once. I don't know if this is that song. For the record, I was not in love with swimming pools either. I didn't think that was, and that didn't set the world on fire for me personally as a song, as a single, as a lead single. So that being said, once I heard it in the context of the album, I appreciated it more. Still didn't love it, but I appreciated it more and respected it. So I think that, you know, I'm not going to sell my Kendrick Lamar stock off yet just because I didn't love the single. But, you know, I think that I'm very excited to hear what he does. Now, as far as how much crossing over matters in this day and age, it matters. It definitely matters, especially in an era where record sales aren't what they used to be. And, you know, when respected artists are selling, you know, a fraction of what they used to sell, you know, you need the support of everybody. You can't just limit yourself to just the backpackers or just the, you know, the rich kids or just the dope boys or just anybody. You need all the support and fans and help you can get in this day and age as an artist. So that being said, crossing over is necessary to a certain degree, I believe. I think Kendrick Lamar already accomplished that, though. I think that the first album, it didn't cross over in the sense of him selling himself short or changing who he was and not being true to himself. But I think that when you look at a Kendrick Lamar show, I had the privilege of going to a festival.
Concert.
And Kendrick Lamar was at the festival. It was the Pay Dues Festival from 2 years ago. And when I was there, Kendrick Lamar was the headlining act, and, you know, of course it was a festival, but it was still a hip-hop festival, and when you looked out at the audience, it was everybody. I saw, you know, Asian dudes and women and black men and women and Hispanic men and women and white men and women, and we were all together, all crowded around this stage, singing word for word with Kendrick Lamar songs. You know, he was the focal point that brought all these people together. So I think that his crossover success is already in place. I don't think that he needs to necessarily go above and beyond or do anything extra to maintain that, per se. I think that he's already there. I think that, you know, what I'm hoping for is that we don't receive a Wiz Khalifa type transformation where he, you know, dyes his hair funky colors or you know, starts changing his clothes up drastically to the point that you don't even recognize this guy anymore. But like I said, all in all, I think that Kendrick will be fine, and I think that the album will be of quality. You know, it's going to be hard to top Good Kid, Mad City, but, you know, I think that if anybody in the game has the capacity to make a solid follow-up album, it's probably this man.
Well, that raises a whole other issue. The issue of, will this fall short of expectations because he set them so high with his last record? And I agree with you that, I mean, I do think he's generally earned the respect of fans and pundits or whoever, that this project, I think we can anticipate that this project will be good regardless. I don't really think crossing over matters, though. Like, I feel like crossing over is kind of a thing of the past, much like, to some degree anyway, how the segregation of hip-hop by region was a much bigger issue 15 years ago, 20 years ago, than it is now. I feel like crossing over, because hip-hop has become so mainstream on its own, Kendrick never really put forth the effort to cross over so much prior to this point. And yet he's still a well-known artist. He's still getting called up by TNT to come perform for the Cavs game in Cleveland when LeBron came back, and he still has his record, you know, running on NBA commercials and stuff like that. Like, he's kind of already reached that point, and he hasn't even really attempted to. I don't know, and I'm not saying that he, like, went out and said to himself, okay, alright, Kendrick, I'm gonna go ahead and I gotta figure out a song that white people are really gonna enjoy, and they're gonna play it as bumper music on Buick commercials, and they're gonna play it in arenas everywhere, and I'm going to get on the cover of Time magazine and all this other stuff. Like, I don't think he really set out to do that necessarily, but I just don't feel like he has to, nor do I feel like at this point any artist really has to. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I will say this. There was a very wise man that once said, I didn't cross over. I brought the suburbs to the hood. You know, so maybe he didn't cross over. Maybe he just stayed true to who he was, and people were able to resonate with that from all walks of life.
Well, I'm a wise man myself. I didn't say that, but yeah, that was Jay-Z. But I'm a wise man myself. I might not be Jay-Z wise. Yeah, forget that. I am Jay-Z wise. And let me tell you something. I've always maintained that the streets always lead. The streets will always dictate what is hot and what's the next thing coming. We know, you and I both know, that African-American males in this day and age are the most emulated group of people on the planet. And whatever we decide that's hot tends to normally be hot. And it tends to expand from there. And that's just kind of how it's been musically and culturally. And so Kendrick was one of those cats that he was so dope that it his legend just kind of grew, and before you knew it, his reputation preceded himself, and then he dropped a classic album after that, you know, and that just solidified that legend. So, I, you know, again, I don't know that this new album will be a classic or anything like that. I don't even, does it even have a release date or a title yet?
He was back in the corner on one of the interviews I saw recently. I think it may have been with Ebro, and he kind of tried to get the title out of him, and you know, he said that he has a title in mind. He did not want to spill it just yet. So there is no official title on record yet, and there is no release date as of yet.
Yeah, man, I think he's planning something, man. I think this dude is up to something major. Like, he might just pull a Beyonce or something similar to that and just be out of left field completely and just all of a sudden, voila, we got a new album, y'all. Go get it.
Hopping over barbed wire fences, nigga, I had this one broad ride. She was so damn sprung, she used to hold my motherfucking sack, nigga. Thought you thought, nigga, in a motherfucking VHS motherfucking canister.
In a what?
Nigga, yeah. Hey, I promise you, nigga, this game been so damn deep.
Said this rap game's been good to me.
Hard times.
But I don't know how long that's gonna be, yeah. I hope I don't go back to slavery. Don't wanna go back.
Selling dinners for the church, red-handed. Caught me stealing money out of purse. Got branded, permanent with scars on my back. Cause I used to get beat with racing car tracks. But now me got wheels. Holding a conference call on my hands, free car, telephone licking like I'm talking to myself. Shooting the breeze, cutting it up real tough, like chopping it up like true businessmen. Talking about, by the way, B, what we do this week on Southgate? If I ain't in Japan, I'm in the valley. Or maybe next door in Gary Payton bowling alley. Or maybe at the shooting range, me and Banks bang on the golf course with Merton Hanks overlooking the sun. Give me my props with a view that's out of this world. Looking down on doctors, sipping on the porch, watching my kids play basketball in the backyard on a 40 by 63 foot long sports court.
Yeah. I hope I don't go back to slaying
what?
To get my mail. I hope I don't go back to slaying
what?
Slaying
what else?
To get my mail.
Build a spot up in the wilderness, coyotes and wild boars, DuPont registry, aluminum pool table made strictly for outdoors. 20-inch chrome flipper robbers on my grill, feeling that everybody ain't able to be blessed with a successful as independent record label. Check it out, marbles. I got the game from my uncle St. Charles. Used to bank across the street at Wells Fargo, but now it's Merle Lynch. And just think, I used to sit the bench. I remember getting chased by the cops. Had to get my stomach on, swallowed a quarter ounce of rocks. Late afternoon, poker waiting for me outside of Vallejo Kaiser Permanente emergency room with clocks ready to rot and they ding me to death. Somehow I managed to make my escape through the back of the cafeteria by the vending machine department. Found myself running through the friendship apartment complex over there by the railroad tracks, around the corner from the People's Continuation High School, somewhere off in Memphis, behind Janae's liquor.
I don't go back to sleep.
Check it out. Check it out. Check it out.
Check it out. Dope game then going. Now see the white collar crime or hooking up on Charlie Hustle. I got a Charlie Maddox. I'm doing a compilation. Should I go with Funky Fat Rocky Fat? I tell him, hell yeah, that's a done deal. Dude, them off the inches. Dude, them dip my cover in my bus bitches.
Bus bitches.
Game oriented, worldwide, sick with it. Yeah, independent shit.
I say, all right,
I'ma tell you, nigga, that's the thing. On the website, hiphopsportsreport.com, we did an article this week on Maybach Music Group. And, you know, when we're talking about prominent artists like Kendrick, you have to talk about Rick Ross, because he's about as prominent as they get. He seems to be less prominent these days because he lost weight. He's not fat anymore. And I wrote in an article, like, I kind of like my Rick Ross to be a total fat ass. Like, I don't understand why he has to be skinny. Skinny, like, I think LeBron messed it up for everybody, because LeBron went the skinny route. Then all of a sudden, Carmelo got super skinny. Then all of a sudden, you know, Rick Ross starts losing weight. Like, Rick Ross, like, he took pride in being fat. And I thought that was hilarious. And, you know, he rapped about food all the time. I don't want to hear him rap about fitness or going to the gym. You know, I don't want to hear him rapping about that stuff. I want to hear him rapping about lemon pepper, Wingstop, you know, apple pie, whatever, cookies and potato chips. I just want to hear him rap about potato chips and lobster bisque like he used to do. Shout out to Ross for trying to get in shape. And all jokes aside, even though I do think it helps his image and his aura if he's fat, in all seriousness, shout out to him for getting himself in good shape and being healthy, because we don't want a big pun situation on our hands, man. But yeah, we wrote about MMG on the pod, or on the website rather, and you know, it kind of appeared to me, Kenneth, that Maybach, there may be some chinks in the armor with MMG, and I don't really. I was a little conflicted writing it, only because I didn't want to make it seem like I'm predicting their demise. Like, it's not like I'm saying like they're gonna self-destruct tomorrow, and by 2015 there will be no more Maybach Music. I'm not even saying nothing like that, y'all. But really what it was there was a lot of little things that happened within that clique this year, and it seemed to be pointing in the wrong direction. Like, if you had a stock up, stock down, or hip-hop power rankings, even though power rankings are meaningless, like, if you had power rankings like they do for NFL and NBA or whatever, the hip-hop power rankings, the red arrow would be down. We're bearish right now on MMG. And it's just because the performance of the Mastermind album, the anticipation for this Hood Billionaire album, I don't really feel like it's very strong. I do like the record Ross has out with Yo Gotti. I do not like the record he has with Jay-Z. I thought that was whack. And then in addition to that, there's a lot of stuff with Stiley's album. And you and I discussed it in a previous conversation as far as what it seemed like went wrong with Stiley's project as far as record sales was concerned. And maybe what could have been done differently. The Meek and Wale back and forth thing on social media happened this year, and then Meek got locked up. Just like a lot of negative stuff was surrounding that camp. How do you feel about the state of Maybach Music right now? I mean, is this something that they can recover from? Because I feel like they can recover from it, but it just seems to be trending in the wrong direction.
Absolutely. I absolutely think that they can recover from it. You know, honestly, at least as far as, you know, I don't know the inner workings of all the whole roster, but I mean, I know that, you know, I know the larger names. And you know, and I'm familiar with pretty much everybody on the roster, more or less. I know they signed somebody this week. I'm not really familiar with that guy. I think his name is Yauda. He's from Las Vegas, if I'm not mistaken. But aside from, you know, him, you know, I'm familiar with Rocky Fresh. I'm familiar with Stiley. I'm familiar with Fat Trell. And then I'm familiar, obviously, with Meek and Wale and Stiley. Stiley. I think I mentioned him earlier.
Don't forget Gunplay.
Oh, and my man Gunplay, Don Logan. You know, you know, honestly, when I look at the whole roster, like, individually, I enjoy each and every one of those artists in some capacity. Some more than others, but, you know, all of them are in my iPod right now, and they may get some play in my car at any given day. So that being said, you know, I think that the truth of the matter is that the music comes first, and I think that all these guys have the capacity to make a good song. You know, like I said, of all the people I just named, aside from the new guy who I'm not particularly familiar with yet, everybody else that's on the MMG roster, I am, they all have a song, at least one song that I can say I actively like. Even, you know, down to, like I said, the newer cats even. You know, the Fat Trails and the Rocky Freshes and those guys. You know, but all that being said, I think that they might need to regroup. They may need to switch up their formula somewhat. I know that a lot of people their issues with Ross previously were just the fact that they didn't think that his music was really creative. There's a lot of repetition as far as like maybe beat selection or maybe subject matter or even just the actual flow, delivery, things like that. I think that maybe Mastermind was his chance to maybe step out of the box a little bit. And I think maybe he was trying to do some things a little different than what he had done normally. And when he saw that that didn't work and that the people didn't respond as well to that, I think that that's when he tried to double back with this Hood Billionaire album to say, hey, I still got the streets. But I do think that he maybe lost some of his power, so to speak, as far as being, hot in the game right now with the Mastermind album, because it was very forgettable. It was funny because in my leisure time, I was sitting back and I was drinking a cup of coffee and reading the Hip Hop Sports Report like I normally do. And I was reading an article in there, and it was about NMG, and it was written in the article that the question was posed, what were the three singles off of the Mastermind album? And honestly, I don't know. I gave it some real thought. I remember the Sanctified song. I think that may have been one of the singles. And other than that, I'm not exactly sure what the other two singles were. Moving forward, he'll definitely have to bring it in 2015 if he wants to keep Maybach afloat.
I just want to hear Rick Ross rap about potato chips. That's really what I want to hear. But I'll give you this. According to Wikipedia, so take that for what it is. According to Wikipedia, the three singles off Mastermind was Devil Is a Lie with Jay-Z, War Ready with Young Jeezy, and Thug Cry, something like that, with Lil Wayne. Those, according to Wikipedia, those were the three singles. So anybody scoring at home, those are the top three answers is on the board. Those are your answers right there. And I wouldn't have guessed it. You would have guessed Sanctified. You would have guessed maybe the joint with French Montana with that he sampled the Biggie joint. Nah, none of those. According to Wiki, those were the three. And the fact that they weren't easily identifiable, I think, was kind of an issue. I also think it's funny that Rick Ross, before we jump back into the whole MMG thing as a whole, just Rick Ross alone, I mean, I like Ross, man, but has he ever had like a hit song? Or when was the last hit song that he had that it was just him on his own? Like every single is him featuring somebody else. He got to have a feature with him on every record. He's got to have somebody else holding up, propping up the record a little bit with him. Like I feel like he needs to just try to step out on his own. Like, I just want to hear Rick Ross featuring nobody. How about that? How about we have a smash hit that's just him? And, I mean, I don't really remember the last one that he had that was just him by himself. Even the new single off this album, the ones that I've heard so far, featuring Yo Gotti, featuring Jay-Z. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just can't step out on his own and make something hot. I'm highly critical of Rick Ross, which is crazy because I actually do like him as an artist. And so, when he inevitably hears this podcast, Ricky, I don't want you to, sit back and have any animosity in your heart towards me. I actually think you're a dope MC and your music is really good. There's a lot of things and a lot of the ways that you move that I don't really agree with, but I think you're talented. Kind of like Peyton Manning in that regard. But speaking of features, getting back to that point, you and I in a prior conversation, we talked about Staley's album, Ohio. You and I both liked that record, but what did you... we kind of both felt like it was lacking something, and we talked about the features in that, and it actually, I kind of stole a little bit of your idea and put it in the article, but what do you feel like could have been done to help Staley's album out a little bit? Because I think it was only... It only sold between 7,000 and 10,000 copies in its opening week, and even by 2014 standards, that's not good at all.
Well, let me say this. First and foremost, just to backtrack just for a brief second, I want to say that I also have a tremendous amount of respect for Rick Ross as an artist, but I will say that he's an idiot if he thinks that the Miami Heat will have a better record than the Cavaliers this season.
Did he say that?
He said that he would bet $100,000. And I don't have $100,000 to bet right now, but if Rick Ross wants to bet a couple hundred bucks, he needs to come holler at your boy, because I will take his money and I will go buy some Wingstop with it.
What about Stolly though? We getting off subject.
Sorry, I'm sorry. I got sidetracked. I heard him talking crazy. I had to bring that up. But yeah, back to Stolly. Stolly's album. It's a great album. For anybody who hasn't checked it out, go check out Stolly's album. It's called Ohio. In listening to it, I think that there's a disconnect. You know, a lot of times people, first and foremost, I don't think that a lot of people really know who Stolly is at this point. And I think that he's kind of an anomaly in that sense. You know, he's not a street dude exactly. You know, he's not really about the flashy stuff. He has more substance than that, but people don't really know exactly where the substance is going. All that being said, you know, I think that, you know, he's not a backpacker type of guy per se. You know, he's not really underground. I don't think that the public really knows what to do with Stolly. So that being said, I think that when his album came out, it kind of fell out the sky first and foremost, and I don't think it had the right build up to it. I think that if, you know, he had maybe put out just some songs in general with other, you know, noteworthy artists, and maybe he could have built that buzz. I think that in calling your album Ohio and then having no Ohio features on your album, I think you're kind of short-selling Ohio in that sense. You know, so maybe if you're going to call your album Ohio, and the concept then at that point is to build something that's going to be, you know, build some kind of synergy and get Ohio to rally behind you, it's hard to do that if you don't actually support Ohio on your record. You know, and I don't even know exactly how he could have done that. Maybe if he got some high-tech beats, or if he had, you know, reached out to some of the rappers who are from Ohio and got them on some remixes or something. Anything. But the thing is that to call his album that and to regionalize it in that sense and then not get the backing of that region, there's not even other Midwest people on his album, I don't think. I don't think that your average West Coast rap fan or Nipsey Hussle fan is going to go buy a Stolly album just because he gives, you know, his 16 on there.
We could have got an Adrian Broner 16 for that. I mean, he's from Ohio. He's from Ohio. I mean. Well, no, let me stop. We didn't mean that. Stick to boxing, Adrian. Nobody wants an Adrian Broner 16. I wanted to ask you this also, man. In one of our prior conversations, you emphasized to me that there was something that you wanted to get off your chest and that you specifically wanted to discuss. Do you remember what that was?
Honestly, no. There's a lot of things I want to get off my chest.
We had a discussion about, I don't even know if we had a discussion, it may have been through text, but we touched on whether or not our man Sean Carter is washed or not. And you kind of said something to the effect of, I need to get on the podcast and talk about this. this is important. Like, we need to discuss. The floor is yours. I mean, I'm not going to co-sign that statement, but I'd be lying if I said that we've heard some of his best work of late. What did you want to talk about in regards to Jay-Z potentially being washed?
Well, you know, first and foremost, let me qualify all this by saying, you know, let me back up and give you some of my pedigree here. Jay-Z is my favorite rapper. Jay-Z has been my favorite rapper. I'm 33 years old. Jay-Z's been my favorite rapper since I was in high school. You know, this is probably around the time that Can I Get a came out. That was like right around the time that I was like really not introduced to Jay-Z's music, but that's when I really started to get familiar with his catalog and really start to appreciate what he was doing. He's been my favorite rapper since then. That being said, in this day and age, he's not the person that I listen to the most in my, you know, in my day-to-day life, but I listen to Jay-Z today. And, you know, again, I have a lot of love for Jay-Z, his music, for what he did with Rockefeller and what he's done since Rockefeller, even with Roc Nation. All that being said,
here it comes. Here it comes, y'all.
It's been quite some time since I actually heard a body of work with full songs from Jay-Z that I was completely satisfied with. I would say the last time was probably the Blueprint 3. People, it got mixed reviews, and I get a lot of, you know, different feedback on that particular album, but at that time, that was the last time where I listened to a Jay-Z album and said, okay, that's my man Jay doing his thing, and I'm fine with this. Watch the Throne, for all the hype and all the pomp and circumstance, it never really lived up to what I thought it was going to be. I understand that Jay-Z's getting older in his life now. He's been rich for more of his life than he's been poor. So it's hard for him to maybe relate to some of the things that he was talking about in some of his older albums, as far as hustling on the block and struggling and this and that. He's been wealthy for quite some time now, and I think that the disconnect is maybe starting to get to him musically, or maybe it's just the fact that he's just grown up, and he said, he already told us to go putting on our button-ups and everything, and told us to go put on our suit and ties, and, I guess after that, it's like there's just not a whole lot left in the tank. When I hear Jay-Z now, I hear Jordan on the Wizards. And it hurts my heart to say that because he is my favorite rapper. But, I listened to this last album, Magna Carta Holy Grail. And in listening to it, it's a lot of art talk and everything. And the truth of the matter is that I loved Basquiat before Jay-Z knew who Basquiat was. But that being said, I don't want to hear Jay-Z rap about his Basquiat. It gets old really quick, and it's fine, and I can understand that maybe his time for rapping about selling drugs for song after song after song has passed, and maybe we don't need to hear songs about him and his goons and what they're gonna do, and how he's walking around with big guns at a body of your squad and all that. Maybe he's past all that and he's grown up, and that's fine, but that doesn't mean I want to hear the music that comes as a result of that. Seen It All was a good song, I thought, with him and Jeezy this year. Other than that, again, when I listen back to the last album, or I listen to the other, bits and pieces and things I've heard from him, I just hear a bored, uninspired man. He's run out of ways to talk about how cool he is and how rich he is, and he's run out of fly stuff to say, so now he's just going through the motions.
See, I feel like this is a little unfair, and I feel like this is what we do. And a lot of it is just due to the fact that hip hop is a young genre, as we've discussed here on the podcast before. It's not that old. We haven't really seen a bunch of old rappers grow into their old age. A lot of them get shot, frankly. But beyond that, we haven't seen a lot of rappers grow into their old age as musicians, like we've seen the Stones do, and Aerosmith, and whoever else, whatever, your grandfather's favorite rock group is. You know what I'm saying? We haven't really seen that. Jay-Z, he rapped for years. He rapped about selling dope and all that stuff, and he does that. But if he kept doing that, people would say, you don't live that life anymore. Why are you rapping about that? And then some people, such as yourself, has a problem with him rapping about artwork, which is his life these days. He is introduced to art, and he is buying paintings and stuff like that, and he's letting Blue lean on him or whatever he said. And like, this is the life he's living now, but you don't want to hear that either. But then you turn around and you praise him for Seeing It All, and all he did was talk about selling dope on that record. And so it's kind of like, what is he supposed to do? How is he supposed to satisfy people at this point?
And that's a valid question. It's one that I've seen T.I. raise in several interviews, because he's talked about that a lot, just about how once you've gotten to a certain point, people, they don't want to hear you do this, they want to hear you do that. And, as a artist and a businessman, T.I. was looking at it like he wanted to, he wanted to please everybody. And a lot of times it can kind of be frustrating, I think, from a creative standpoint, to not have a pure direction for where you're going, because it's not coming from an organic place now. It's coming from the place of what's going to be okay with the advertisers. Who's going to pull out if I start talking crazy on record? You don't want to talk about putting Molly all in your champagne, because you might lose your deal. You might lose your some money behind that. You want to be mindful of what you're saying, but at the same time, if you want to appeal to the kids and appeal to the streets and that sort of thing, you got to be a tough guy. And, there comes a point where, even the tough guys start bowing down when the almighty dollar comes into play. I think that when you have somebody like a Jay-Z who hangs out with Oprah, he's thinking there's too much money at play here, and there's too many opportunities available for me to sit here and start you know, glorifying, you know, all the crack that I sold, you know, on my albums because of the fact that, you know, so, you know, if somebody like an Oprah gets wind of this, what's going to happen? How is that going to affect him? You know, I honestly think that these are the things that he might think about when he's out here doing what he does and making the moves that he makes. You know, I think that something like a song with Jeezy might fly under Oprah's radar because I don't think Oprah's necessarily checking for young Jeezy all like that. But, you know,
what the hell's her problem?
Well, that's a whole other issue in and of itself. But, you know, I do feel that, you know, if Jay-Z had an album where he said, okay, well, I'm going back to this, you know, he might get some of that negative feedback for that. You know, I don't think that, I think that it is kind of a place where you have, especially for rappers, you know, because of the fact that they've painted themselves in this corner artistically to begin with, they look up and it says, okay, well, what else can I talk about now? Because people won't buy, you know, it's hard for me to latch on to Jay-Z's artwork when I had been latched on to Jay-Z's bragging and self-grandeur and, you know, all the other things that he was talking about previously, because this is, you know, what he talks about now, you know, he tries to clean it up and sanitize it, and, you know, he tries to sprinkle things in there just to kind of satisfy his old audience, but, you know, the family-friendly, you know, softer side of Jay-Z is not really what I wanted artistically. You know, I don't know where he can go from here, honestly.
I just think it's unfair. I mean, like, you know, you said, like, well, rappers, they kind of paint themselves in a corner. Like, no, people like you are painting him into a corner because you're saying, I don't want to hear him talk about his artwork. I don't want to hear him talking about his private jet or whatever else. And it's just like, this is just the phase of life that he's in now, and he can always play that card. Even if that card gets old, he can always play the I'm richer than you card, and I mean it. You know, not like the rap about it now, hope you get it later type rappers that he's talked about in the past. No, he really lives this lifestyle, and as much as people like you and me crave and you know, we need to be satiated with realism behind the rhymes, he's actually living what he's rapping about, and you got a problem with it. I think that's crazy. Like I'm not saying that.
Wait a minute now. So this is the issue that I have with your statement, though, is that when you think about it like that, and you say that I have painted him, or that society or us as fans have painted him into a corner, I don't believe that at all. I mean, if you listen to Reasonable Doubt, what was the subject matter?
Selling dope.
If you listen to his next album, In My Lifetime, what was the subject matter?
Selling dope to a large degree and balling.
Yeah, well, and most of the albums from that point forward up until the Black album were all selling dope, balling, and you know,
shooting people,
whatever else he was talking about at the time, you know. So if you gave us, you know, eight albums of dope dealing and this and that and, you know, whatever he was talking about on those albums, then you painted yourself in that corner. You gave us like 7 albums. An album is what, like 80 minutes long?
He didn't paint himself in that corner, though, because he's evolved. And you're the one saying, no, your evolution's not good enough. That's what's happening here. It's not him.
I'm not saying his evolution's not good enough. I'm saying that I don't want to hear it on record.
It's the same thing.
No, it's not. It's not the same thing at all. I respect, you know, I have a tremendous respect for somebody who's not, you know, who's, you know, at his point in his life and he's not still having pants hanging off his ass and talking about selling drugs every day. You know, he's not doing that, and he's living with his superstar wife and playing with his daughter. You know what? God bless him. That, you know, he's doing what he should be doing at this point. You know, he doesn't mess around in the streets. He doesn't mess around with people who mess around in the streets. He, you know, he's, you know, a reformed citizen, and he's just, a everyday Joe citizen at this point, you know, as far as, you know, being on the up and up is concerned. And, you know, that's awesome. And, you know, and that's something that, you know, all these other guys, and like a Kendrick, that's something that he can aspire to do. You know, not necessarily to get out the streets, because I don't think Kendrick's in the streets like that, but I'm just saying that, you know, to get to that point of life where all you have to do is just, you know, travel the world and play with your daughter, that's pretty awesome. You know, my point is just that, you know, when an artist like this has given us, you know, X amount of albums, and this has been pretty much the entire subject matter of all of the albums, then you definitely painted yourself in that corner creatively. You typecast yourself at that point. You know, if you were, there's other artists out there who, you know, don't, like, if you were, like, let's say Andre 3000, for example, that is a man who has he's never stayed in one place. You know, he was different from the first album to AT Aliens. You know, he had changed up from, you know, in that time frame. You know, he's changed, you know, countless times since then. And that being said, whatever he does next, people will accept it because it's like, oh, well, you know, that's what he's on now. It's like, okay, well, if he said, I'm going to do a farmer gimmick or something, people are like, all right, well, you know, if you're going to see dudes in the club rocking overalls and shit, that's what's going to be next because that's just the way that he moves, you know? But when you have somebody like a Jay-Z who gave you, you know, what he gave you for so long, and then he deviates from that, it's kind of like what, you know, not, and I wouldn't put it necessarily in the same context, but, you know, it's a lot of the same thing that Music Soul Child's gone through recently. You know, he just recently put out a mixtape and called it The Hustle. And The Hustle is the new, I guess, incarnation of Music Soul Child. That's the new character that he is. He calls himself The Hustle, and he's rapping. And he's auto-tune rapping and the whole nine. And he's rapping about just being on his grind and being on his hustle. You know, but the thing is that people don't want to hear that from him because, well, because it stinks. But beyond that, they also don't want to hear it because of the fact that he has been Music Soul Child, you know, the guy wearing the earth tones and the guy singing about love for so long that they're not buying this new wave of music that he's putting out. And you could say, okay, well, maybe it's not true to himself and this and third. Well, the thing is, he doesn't proclaim to be a gangster or to be a tough guy or anything. He just says he's on his hustle.
I just don't agree. I'm not even saying Jay right now is putting out music that is on par with some of the music he's put out before. You know, I'm not even saying that Magna Carta is on par with the Blueprint or nothing like that. But I just feel like I don't think he's painting himself into a corner. I feel like he reaches a new tax bracket or he reaches a new level or stage of life and he switched up what he's rapping about. He was rapping about drugs and all that stuff. And then he got so far removed from that lifestyle, as you pointed out, that he said, you know what, I probably shouldn't be rapping about that as much. Let me start rapping about what I'm on now. And he's on to the next one. Now he's rapping about paintings and he's rapping about, you know, all this other stuff and his daughter and all this other stuff. And I don't really feel like that constitutes as him trying to pull the wool over the eyes of the public. Like he's trying to pass himself off as something that he's not. You know, he didn't typecast himself. That's just what he happened to be rapping about at the time. But then he moved into a different lane and he started rapping about new stuff. Why is that such a problem? I don't get it. Plus, he's going to be 50 years old in 5 years. Like, I just think that this is where he's at now. But we got to leave it there for now. Did you watch the BET Hip Hop Awards?
No.
See, and that's a whole nother thing. I mean, I watched him. I did, you know, I wrote about him leading up to it. I watched him. I didn't expect much from this year, and I was right to not expect much from this year because really, the ciphers weren't that impressive. The performances weren't that impressive. I like the David Banner cipher. You know, he kind of went in about the whole Michael Brown situation in Ferguson. I thought the cipher with Logic was pretty dope, and even though Lil Mama was on it, she didn't really bring it down. There were some other female MCs that were actually doing their thing in that cipher as well. Murder Mook got on stage, and he was shining again. That's like the second time this summer but in 2014 that it was a major hip hop event, and Murder Mook kind of stole the show a little bit. So big year for him, and I'm hoping for good things from him in the future, whether they come on the battle arena or in some other type of arena. And I thought the Taylor Gang cipher was pretty much ass, but the fact that you didn't even watch it, and you fashion yourself as a pretty big hip hop aficionado, and you didn't even watch it, I think that's something. I mean, real quick, because we're running out of time, but do you have any thoughts on the BET Hip Hop Awards in general, or anything that, you know, needs to be done to improve that, or was it just a down year for hip hop in 2014?
I think more or less it's just a down year for hip hop, honestly. I mean, the thing is that, you know, let me also, you know, say that, you know, although I kicked this whole thing off by talking about how much this portion of the show, talking about how much I love Jay-Z's music and that sort of thing. You know, I'm not one of those dudes that's just stuck in 98. You know, I'm not that kind of guy. I've always been somebody who appreciates art. I'm an artist. So that being said, I can appreciate art from people, and they don't have to be in my age bracket or older than me for me to appreciate it. So
that being said, you know, I have much love for, you know, all the young cats that are out here doing it and getting it in and you know, and writing rhymes and coming up with, you know, new flows and all these things, you know. And it, you know, but that being said, you know, there's just nothing to make me excited, honestly. You know, it was nothing, there was nothing that about the show that said, oh man, I can't wait to see this person. You know, there was nobody that I, it seems like a lot of it was just kind of just recycled acts and recycled concepts. And there was just nothing about it that really pressed me to go search it out, you know. You know, I think that maybe, you know, if there was, you know, some more interesting things going on in music, you know, except even the rappers who are supposed to be the big dogs now, they've been rather disappointing this year. T.I.'s album was disappointing to me. Rick Ross's album, you know, the first album, Mastermind, was disappointing to me. You know, Jeezy's album, I thought, was pretty good. But, you know, all that being said, it's not a whole lot right now that's just really moving the culture, I don't think. And, you know, maybe, you know, I think that maybe that's just what we need in 2014 or in 2015. I think that one of the most exciting things I think for hip hop is when things get stagnant, because of the fact that when they get stagnant like this, usually something good comes of it. You know, usually there's something that comes in that kind of breaks the mold and changes the game. You know, I remember when DMX came in the game, that was what people said about him, because they were thinking everything was about shiny suits and talking about how much money you had. And then you know, everybody was riding around in Bentleys and stuff. And then you had this guy come in with his energy. And, you know, he, you know, his first video was black and white. It was real grimy, you know. Then, you know, Rough Riders Anthem came out, and you see him in there on four-wheelers in New York in the streets. And that's something that, you know, for us that aren't New Yorkers, you know, we've never seen before. And, you know, it just brought a whole new energy to the game. So I'm hoping that 2015, you know, maybe, you know, the stagnation that we have right now will birth something that will be, you know, more exciting, and you know, moving forward, we can really just get, just go somewhere else with the culture right now.
I think what's on the horizon is more of the rise of the nerd rap. More nerd rap is on the way in 2015. That's what I personally believe. The Kid Cudis, the Gambinos, y'all know who they are. All these guys, and I'm not using nerd as a derogatory phrase, because I actually like these artists, and I don't love them. This is gonna sound really backhanded, but I don't hold it against them that they're kind of nerd rappers, or so to speak. But then I do think that they're kind of too nerdy for me to get too behind them. Like I don't know, but that's just kind of my own personal thing that I'm struggling with in my own brain. But I think that we're gonna see more of that stuff on the way. The kid from Chicago, Chance the Rapper, more cats like that, more that you know, off brand, off beat, I should say, not off brand, off beat, just kind of nerd stuff. I mean, I think we're going to see more of that stuff in the future. But it was 2014 was kind of a weird year, man, and it's almost behind us. But you know, I don't think anybody's going to miss nothing. 2013 was such a huge year for hip hop, and 2012 was too, for that matter. We were due for a down year. These things are cyclical, so it's not too surprising that we're having a down year this year. But I'm confident that there's enough talent. There's enough in the talent pool right now that hip hop is going to come back strong next year. And really, all it was this year was about the shmoney dance. You know what I'm saying? And that kid, that kid went from obscurity in June and July to closing the show at the BET Hip Hop Awards in October. It's incredible. I mean, just the age we live in, man, is something incredible. We're just about out of time, man. We're actually a little bit over on time, so we have to wrap this up right now. But thank you for joining us, Kenneth. Again, album, or not album, might as well be an album, man, but it's a book, though. You're an artist. Natural Life is the name of it. Natural Life is coming soon, and want to shout you out for that, and appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Hey, anytime. Again, Natural Life is coming soon. It's getting some real great feedback right now. I'm really excited. This is going to be, you know, I'm not quite sure. There's a chance it still might make it out in 2014. Most likely it will be out. It'll wind up coming out in 2015, though. You know, whether it comes out in 2014 or 2015, it's the book of the year of both years. So it doesn't matter. Either year it comes out, you'll hear it here first.
spanning 2 years. There you go. Natural Life coming soon. Thank you for joining us, everybody. Thank you. And I apologize for the hiatus, for the sabbatical that I took from the podcast. We're back at it, y'all. And like I said, we're gonna double it up this week, because we're gonna have another sports podcast, sports heavy podcast, coming at you later this week. Kenny, thank you for joining us again. Hit us on Twitter at HHS Report. Let us know what you thought about the podcast. Tell us, is Jay-Z washed, or is just something in my crazy brother's imagination? I don't know. Hit us on Facebook at facebook.com/HHS Report as well. Hit the podcast on iTunes, of course. And always, the website is hiphopsportsreport.com. We're about to get out of here, and we wanted to say rest in peace to Big Bank Hank from Sugar Hill Gang, man. Lost his battle with cancer this week, and so we're going to ride out on a little Rapper's Delight, man. But we love you, man. You're a pioneer of hip-hop, and you're going to take us home this evening. Thank y'all for joining us. Peace.
I said a hip-hop, the hip-hop, the hip-hop, you don't stop the rocker to the bang, bang, boogie, say up, jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat. Now what you hear is not a test, I'm rapping to the beat. And me, the groove, and my friends are going to try to move your feet. You see, I am Wonder Mike, and I like to say hello. Up to the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, and the purple, and yellow. But first, I gotta bang, bang, the boogie to the boogie. Say up, jump the boogie to the bang, bang, boogie. Let's rock. You don't stop. Rock the rhythm, that'll make your body rock. Well, so far, you've heard my voice, but I brought two friends along. And next on the mic is my man Hank. Come on, Hank, sing that song.
Check it out. I'm the C-A-S and the O-V-A, and the rest is F-L-Y. You see, I go by the code of the doctor of the mix, and these reasons I'll tell you why. You see, I'm 6'1", and I'm tons of fun, and I dress to a D. You see, I got more clothes than Muhammad Ali, and I dress so viciously. I got bodyguards, I got two big guards that definitely ain't the whack. I got a Lincoln Continental and a some new Cadillac. So after school, I take a dip in the pool, which is really on the wall. I got a color TV so I can see the Knicks play basketball. Hear me talking about checkbook, credit cards, more money than a sucker could ever spend. But I wouldn't give a sucker or a punk from the rock, not a dime till I made it again. Everybody go hotel, motel, what you gonna do today? Cause I'm gonna get a fly girl, gonna get some spank and drive off in a Death OJ. Everybody go hotel, motel, Holiday Inn. You see, if your girl starts acting up, then you take her friend. I'm Master G. Oh, my mellow is on you, so what you gonna do?
Well, it's on and on and on and on and on. The beat don't stop until the break of dawn. I said a M-A-S, a T-E-R, a G with a double E.